Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
And tonight we have two films from 1986 and The Divine Miss M. We have Ruthless People and we have Down and Out in Beverly Hills.
In which she plays a character named Barbara in both.
Oh, yes. They're not the same character, although there are similarities.
Yes. She sings in one.
Yes, she does.
Which is an odd bone, but anyway.
It turns out that second movie is weird. Is upon reflection...
Well, you can't say second clarify which is which.
I don't know which came out historically first, but we're going to take them in the order of Ruthless People first and Down and Out in Beverly Hills second.
I'm going to guess Ruthless People came first, but...
let's find out.
Ruthless People came out 27 June 86... Down and Out came out 31 January 86, so Down and Out Beverly Hills was first.
I think I still want to talk about them in the order of Ruthless People first.
That's fine.
So, how do you remember Ruthless People, and when you watch it now, how did it hold up for you?
We saw it in the theater together.
I'm sure we did.
And I remember thinking at the time that it was hilarious. But I also would have been like 13 years old.
I took many people to this movie. I took you. I took Grandma. Dan Brownfield and I saw it the same day that we saw Legal Eagles and Running Scared.
Oh, man. Wow, that's rough.
All at Valley River.
I thought it was hilarious when I saw it the first time. On rewatch, it was amusing-ish, but I didn't laugh at all. My boyfriend Jesse, who has never seen either of these movies before, he laughed out loud in several spots.
Excellent.
It's got some tone problems.
Yeah, for an 80s movie, I'm going to just interrupt you to say, for an 80s movie, I thought this movie worked out pretty well. It held up pretty well.
It did. Some of the technology, a little dated, but that's to be expected in a movie that's 40 years old.
Well, it works with our Kleptember theme because it's actually a heist movie. Well, kind of.
Yeah, it's kind of a heist-ish movie. So let me back up. I remember that we liked this movie so much that we ended up buying the soundtrack on vinyl that we had around the house. And inexplicably, there are many songs on the soundtrack, on the vinyl soundtrack, that are never in the movie.
Yes.
I.e. a Paul Young song.
Which Paul Young song was that?
Wherever I Lay My Hat, That's My Home.
Ah, okay.
And I remember that song to this day. Like, I can sing I could sing the entire song to you at any moment's notice. Because I think it's a great song. I went looking on YouTube yesterday for the song and saw him singing it and was, what's the right adjective? Horrified at how he looks?
Because you'd never seen a picture of him before?
I'd never seen a picture of him before. And this was like some pretty boy 80s music video. It was jarring. I think it was just jarring. It's kind of like when you see the dude from Simply Red. You're like, ooh, wow, this is, different. So I was having some dissonance in my head because of the soundtrack and listening to the movie and watching the movie and not hearing music that I had expected to be there, and then hearing music that I don't remember. So anyway, it was an interesting experience. But there's parts of this movie that have always stuck with me. I don't know if we just want to spoil all of the movie.
Oh, no, we're going to spoil these 30-year-old movies.
Yeah. Also, they're comedy, so they're really hard. The plot's kind of moot and irrelevant, but there's a couple scenes that I remember historically being really funny.
Did you remember the Wrong Number?
Yes.
Scene? Yes, of course.
That's one of the ones that that got used well into my early 20s as a joke, which in retrospect is horrifying.
It's just a throwaway joke in the movie, but it's pretty funny.
Hello? Debbie? Yeah, Debbie's here. Who's this? Well, Ralph, Debbie can't talk right now. My dick's in her mouth. How about if I have her call you back when I'm done? I love Wrong Numbers. Anyway.
It is pretty funny. The Dustbusters thing was really funny.
Yes, weird and funny. I remember Bill Pullman's passport photo.
I was thinking Bill Pullman could have, he was the same character in Lost Highway. So without the sax.
I was going to say, yeah, he was not quite as acid jazzy.
If he'd had a sax, then.
Oh, man.
That and then the tofu burger frying pan scene. The torture, yes. that stuck with me forever because I thought that was hilarious. I don't know why, but I did. Also, in both movies, there's dogs. Dogs play a very prominent part.
Both movies are billed as kind of wacky comedies. And when we get to Down Under Beverly Hills, I have some thoughts. But with Ruthless People, I think it still works as a sort of zany comedy because it's directed by Jim Abrams, David Zucker, and Jerry Zucker. Yeah. And the movies they have directed that we have talked about would be top secret.
Yeah. Now, this movie very, very easily could be recast and remade with just a little bit of modernization, and it would be fine.
Oh, yeah.
The Art Deco in the film was horrific,
but that was part of the joy of it. Was that okay? So let's get into it.
It was like a zany golf movie.
It's on purpose though. This is so 80s. First of all,
it is quintessentially.
It has 80s. An 80s opening. It's got the yes. animated opening, and it's got Mick Jagger singing "Ruthless People."
Yes,
not the Rolling Stones, because this is a period of time where the Rolling Stones had probably retired. And yeah, hadn't realized that the only money they'd be getting would be from touring later in their career.
I thought it was fitting that we watch a Rolling Stones movie the week after the parents go to a Rolling Stones concert.
Yes.
So, again, Mick Jagger, not Rolling Stones, but...
Oh, still, though. Not a great song, but a very 80s song.
Oh, it's an awful song.
And then later in the movie, I'm thinking to myself, what is this movie? What is this song I'm listening to? That's not Billy Joel, is it?
Yes,
it was Billy Joel.
Yeah. And the Mick Jagger song isn't good. Like, he doesn't sound good. It's bad, and he doesn't sound good.
It's like they got him in the studio for half an hour. And they said, Mick, here are the lyrics. You know, can you do your thing for a half an hour? And they recorded it, and they're like, okay, we'll mix it. It'll be fine.
Yeah, here's your million dollars. We'll fix it in post, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, because it's not a good song. Yeah, and the Billy Joel song was just... As soon as I heard it start up, I thought, oh, God, I remember this.
It's actually one... Let me see if I can find it. So the lyrics from the very first verse. You see her sitting with her coffee and her paper, with her high-top sneakers of Italian design. With a long, cool stare, she aggravates the tension, makes up her face while she makes up her mind. That is the lyric that I'm like, okay, who is this person? I know these kind of lyrics. What the hell? And then I was like, oh, these are Billy Joel lyrics.
Yes. Was there really any doubt?
Later in the song, it says, but times have changed. Things are not the same, baby. You overcame such a bad attitude. Rock and roll just used to be for kicks. And nowadays, it's politics. And after 1986, what else could be new? You've got to learn to relax and face the facts of modern woman. And you're an old-fashioned man. She understands the thing you're doing. She's a modern woman.
Yeah. It makes me wonder if they wrote the lyrics.
No, or... he wrote the, she makes up her face while she makes up her mind. That has got to be a BJ original.
Yeah, but, oh, dear God. I wonder if they gave him points and said, here's, you need to have these in the song. But again, I don't know.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. It's weird. It definitely puts a pin in the date of this movie.
Oh, I don't think it's beautiful, but I agree with you that it definitely dates the movie. Yes. This is a Billy Joel needs money song.
But it's not in a bad way, though. I mean, again, this is to me, this is prime 1986. I graduated from high school in 1987. So this would be some of my most formative years as far as like culturally speaking. So this had everything we loved and hated about the 80s all shoved in together. Both of these movies, actually.
Yeah, yeah, so it's true.
It starts off with ruthless millionaire Sam Stone, played by Danny DeVito from Mars Attacks and Heist. And he's having a conversation with his mistress, Carol, Anita Morris, whom he's having lunch with at a trendy Los Angeles restaurant that he intends to murder his vulgar and brash wife, Barbara, played by Bette Midler. Now, all these characters are super over the top. Again, they are ruthless people. Except for Helen Slater, I think everybody in this movie is, well, I mean, Judge Reinhold maybe, but they're all sort of horrible people. Sam especially. Sam wants to kill his wife.
Wait, are you saying that the Judge Reinhold character isn't terrible?
Well, they're making mistakes, but turns out he can't. For instance, he can't sell the stereo to the guy with the pregnant girlfriend.
Okay. But he's locked some woman in his basement.
Well, there's that. He makes mistakes, for sure. Okay. So we have Sam Stone again, Danny DeVito, and his wife, Barbara Stone, Bette Midler. And Sam hates his wife. He married her for money because her father was rich and dying. But the father didn't die. And so in the meantime, Sam has already made his own money, but she still has the most of the fortune. And he hates her. He hates her little dog. He hates her choices in modern furniture and clothing. And he hates the way she breathes. He just hates her completely.
He goes to great exposition as to her breathing.
Yes. And so he gets home and he's all ready to have her killed. He has a bottle of chloroform and everything. But when he gets home, he gets a phone call from an anonymous man announcing that she's been kidnapped and he has to pay $500,000 to get her back or she will be killed. So he's like, woohoo, my problem is solved. So you're saying if I don't pay you the $500,000, then you'll kill my wife.
Yes. If I go to the police and the press and do all these things you don't want me to, she'll be dead.
Yes. And then, of course, what does he do? He breaks all of those rules instantly because he wants her dead.
Funny how that works.
Yeah. So we find out that the kidnappers are actually Ken, Judge Reinhold, who we know from Beverly Hills Cop and Gremlins, and Sandy, Helen Slater, who was, among other things, the legend of Billie Jean and Supergirl and a bunch of stuff from that time. I remember in this movie thinking, she is just the most adorable.
I mean, this is in a flattering way, which will probably not come out that way. She reminds me a lot of Brie. She's got that cutesy smile and the cutesy hair, and she's bubbly and effervescent and kind of perpetually cheery.
But in this movie, she is also played kind of dim in one note. I mean, her character does not have any development in it.
She's mousy.
Yeah, at least Judge Reinhold gets to be alternatively bombastic and having a heart. And in it.
What happened to Judge Reinhold? He just kind of disappeared.
He was great back in the day. I mean, he had a bunch of stuff. Hopefully he's living off
Beverly Hills Cop, right?
Yeah. Was he? But also Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, a ton of those kind of movies, too. So, I find it very difficult not to like anything Judge Reinhold's in.
He's worked, but not really...
He's got to have hundreds of credits, right?
He has 113 credits.
Yeah, that's about right.
But he's still doing movies. I mean, as of 2017, he's done three things. One was a TV movie, and then two were potentially, I guess, movies, for the lack of a better word.
Is there anything in his bio that would lead you to believe that something weird happened to him? Because, again, why is he not like a Paul Reiser type?
He was married to Carrie Fraser until 86, and then Amy Miller, he's currently married to, but I don't know who either of them are. Let's see, early career, Beverly Hills Cop, so later career, he was in Seinfeld, worked with Charles Grodin in direct-to-video movies Beethoven film series. Reinhold was arrested at Dallas's Love Field in December of 2016 for disorderly conduct after objecting to a pat-down from security shortly after he was released from the hospital following an adverse reaction to a medication, which sounds like code. He spent 10 hours in jail and accepted a deferred adjudication agreement where charges would be dismissed in 90 days. There's not much about him. Rapid rise and fall of his current film on Showtime. Judge for Yourself. That was March of 92.
Huh. Well.
So, I don't know. I mean, maybe he's just reclusive.
Or maybe he just, his wave crashed early and he never caught another wave. I mean, it's a fickle business, right?
His name is Edward Ernest Reinhold Jr.
And they thought Judge would be...
Well, his father nicknamed him Judge when he was just 2 weeks old because as a baby he looked stern, like a judge.
Ah, there we go.
He's a perennial favorite. I mean, everything that I've seen him in, I've chuckled, so...
Yeah, well, again, I'm just curious, but... Yeah. So... The reason, by the way, Sam Stone is made his own money is because he stole an idea from Sandy, Helen Slater, back when she worked for him. And so he turned his, spandex miniskirts.
Gasp and swoons. Sandy could have been Olivia Newton-John.
Why? So that's why they kidnap his wife. They wanted to take money from him because he's a bad guy, blah, blah, blah. Unfortunately, Ken and Sandy are in no way capable of holding on to Barbara.
They're, in fact, comically incapable.
Yes, because she is something of a force to be reckoned with.
Yes.
Well, which is, you know, again, if you follow Bette Midler's Twitter, for instance, she's still probably a force to be reckoned with.
I love her.
Oh, me too.
I can't think of a movie she was in that I didn't enjoy. And I say enjoy because, you know, Beaches was a movie, but good God, I don't ever need to watch that again. So, but, you know, she's been in all kinds of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
The Rose.
Yeah, she's a great singer. She's a great performer. She's a great actor.
Mm-hmm. Her comedy, her raunchy comedy special of the, I wonder when did that come out?
And she brought Johnny Carson to tears on his final performance, his final episode.
85. There, Mud Will Be Flung Tonight.
Ah, yes.
Which was.
Oh, is that the thing with Otto Titzlinger?
Yes.
Okay.
Otto Titzling. Which I can. My God, I can't believe I can sing that one. By the way, completely.
No. Three. And
not going to happen. Otto Titzing, inventor and kraut. Anyway, I remember all of that CD because I had it on cassette, I think, at some point, and then got the CD and I made a copy of it for my high school friend Paula, who I think hyperventilated because she was laughing so hard at it. So.
Oh, it's funny stuff.
Yeah. No, it's dirty too. Super sure. Dirty. Like. Super dirty, and you couldn't play it today because it really kind of is offensive. So
well, and she got her start performing in bathhouses in San Francisco, right?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, so she had.
Oh no, she's an absolute gay icon.
Yeah, and a scrapper.
Yeah, I wouldn't want. Yeah, no, she's constantly heckling the Mango Mussolini, which I adore. So
yeah,
so. I adore her heckling. As you say, Mango Mussolini. Yeah.
So anyway. We have this tension where Ken and Sandy are trying to get the ransom for Barbara, but Sam doesn't want Barbara back. Meantime, Barbara, who is chained in their basement, is making a pest of herself, but also manages to have access to watch TV all day long, in which case she watches like aerobic shows. And so by the end of her captivity, fast forward, she has lost 20 pounds. which is all she ever wanted.
And the bizarre subplot of the movie is that his mistress sends her boy toy, who is not the guy that she's sleeping with.
No, the mistress is actually trying to blackmail Sam also.
Yeah.
And her boyfriend is Earl. Bill Pullman from Spaceballs, yes. Malice, and Lost Highway.
Yes.
And again, I don't know if I like Bill Pullman. I don't like his face. But it may be because he's like in this movie, it's perfect because he just looks sort of not present.
It's that frozen, leotarded, stupid ass valley boy face.
Yeah, like cute but dumb.
Yeah, but he's like a mouth breather.
He's not cute. He's handsome but dumb.
I wouldn't even go with handsome. I would just say he's not unattractive, but that's as far as I'm willing to go. But he has that open mouth breather gaze.
And in this, it works great.
Stupid grin. Well, again, he's just playing the Lost Highway character.
He's also playing the Spaceballs character.
Yes. Independence Day, man. In less than an hour. Sorry.
We end up having this whole Three's Company type misunderstanding where Carol has Earl take a video of Sam killing his wife, but ends up actually getting a video of the police chief with a prostitute.
Yes.
And so the police chief thinks he's being blackmailed, and really he's not, and it's all very complicated.
And he's recording it with the biggest, heaviest mobile VCR setup ever.
Oh, it's great, though. It's perfect.
Also, there's no way he could be jumping around with it that much because that thing would have weighed like 50 pounds.
Much like the camcorder in Down and Out in Beverly Hills, which makes a prominent appearance.
Yeah, it was quite the technology porn.
Oh, exactly. So, and also we have a serial killer on the loose. The bedroom killer, we know that is J.E. Freeman from Wild at Heart, Miller's Crossing, Patriot Games, Copycat, and Go. By the way, in the recasting of the movie, he would be played by Richard Brake. Richard Brake is the bedroom killer.
I don't know who that is.
You should look him up. He's great.
I would have gone with Richards. Was it Michael Richards? Seinfeld?
No, but Michael Richards doesn't have a menacing-looking face. Richard Brake looks like a serial killer.
Yeah, but you don't need him to have a menacing face. You just need him to be funny.
No, but the bedroom killer isn't funny.
Nah, but it's a funny movie. I would have cast it funny. You weren't going from the janitor from Malice. I mean, that's who would have been good.
I can't remember the janitor from Malice.
Tries to kill Bill Pullman in the school basement. The lock of hair and all that.
Yeah, okay. But I don't remember what he looked like. There was, were there two, actually, in the basement?
Were there two? Bill Pullman and him.
Okay, and there was some sort of fire extinguisher thing?
Yeah.
Okay. Blah, 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 blah. Again, being a comedy, the plot is sort of, is secondary. Although lots incidental. Of twists and turns, yeah. But it turns out, at the end, Barbara teams up with Ken and Sandy, and they end up screwing Sam. And so Sam is the bad guy, and he gets sort of what he deserves. Everything is really blamed on the bedroom killer, who just gets accidentally killed by Ken and Sandy. And everybody's happy. Sandy and Barbara and Ken are going to... I guess Sandy and Barbara are going to start the new clothing line or whatever.
Yeah. Everybody's happy at the end except for
Sam.
Sam.
Yeah, which is great. It's all you want in a comedy.
Yeah.
And do they replay Ruthless People at the end? No, they replay Modern Woman at the end.
Ah, jeez. Yeah.
Although, there were some crazy credits. Did you watch? It's weird. I don't normally watch through the credits.
Upgrade? Yes, we know.
Yeah, well, no, but did you see the credits in this movie?
Yes.
There was like, best pitcher was Dwight Gooden, and they had a bunch of other baseball references.
Well, they also had, like, crazy animation.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, it was zany, I dare say.
Yeah. Really a wild time. So, Ruthless People. How would you grade it? Or do you have anything else to add?
Oh, no, I don't have anything else to add. So it's hard because muscle memory wants me to give it a good grade, but it's a C. It's a C movie. A C plus maybe, but it's a C movie. It's not an A movie. It's not a B movie. It's not something you want to watch a lot. But as boyfriend Jesse would attest, he chuckled. I mean, he'd never seen it before. He thought it was funny. I don't know if he watched it again if he would laugh, but yeah, it's definitely, it's worth a view. If you haven't seen it recently, it's probably worth a laugh. You know, it's only an hour and a half long, so it's a decent, you know, it's not an investment by any stretch.
Well, and I would say it follows all the beats and all the tropes of a comedy. I mean, it fills the bill. It is a standard comedy. It's nothing more, nothing less, but it works still.
It's very rote.
They're not breaking any new ground here, but they have solid comic beats.
Yeah.
Somewhat unlike the next movie we're going to talk about. Down and Out in Beverly Hills, 1986, also, as we discussed before, directed by Paul Mazursky. Now, can I give you the billing of this movie? The first highest billed actor, Nick Nolte, followed by Bette Midler. Richard Dreyfuss comes third. Elizabeth Peña, fourth. Little Richard, fifth. Evan Richards, the son, sixth. Mike the dog, seventh. And Tracy Nelson, the daughter, eighth. Jeez. The daughter got second billing to the dog.
Yeah.
I wonder if she's Vince Valoof and asked for too much or something.
Mike the dog. Matisse.
Yes. Well, so what did you think about, how did you remember this movie? Did we also see this in the theater? We must have.
Right? Yeah, we did. And this is another one in which I have the soundtrack on vinyl.
Of course, yeah. Besides the Talking Heads song, what else is on this sound? Okay.
Oh, no, it's a lot of instrumental stuff. It's a lot of, like, the Jerry Jumps in a Pool montage and the Loses His Dog song and the Alleyway Sadness song. And it's a lot of
Carmen Pines for Dave song or whatever.
Yeah. But they did not include Clair de Lune, which was our grandmother's favorite classical piece of music.
Can you hum Clair de Lune?
It's a piano song, so no.
Oh,
really.
Is that the Debussy song that he was playing?
Yeah.
Okay, there you go.
That's well, that's playing on the piano. He wasn't singing it.
No, you're right.
I remember watching this movie, I think, like, as a family. I want to say all of us went to see it. It's an odd pick for a movie, though. It makes me wonder if Dad had a thing for Bette Midler.
I think America had a thing for Bette Midler at this time. Hollywood had a thing for Bette Midler.
Perhaps. I guess that's, you know, that's fair. No, I watched the movie. It was very familiar, and I chuckled. I remembered all of it, every beat of it. But during the opening, I realized quickly, like, oh, this is a French remake.
Yes. What was the other French? Is that Mixed Nuts that we saw? Was also a French movie? That was made as an American comedy that did
probably kind of, that sounds right.
Because this has a weird sensibility to it.
Yeah. Well, the birdcage, when we get, we haven't done Birdcage yet, right?
No.
Yeah, same thing.
That's a Dr. Wonders
French movie. Yeah, French remake. So I was comparing this to the Birdcage in my head because I'm like, this is, and then I had to look up Birdcage because I'm like, the Birdcage didn't come along for a while after this, which is 10 years. So, but the fact that this was a French remake explains so much of the movie.
Because
there are so many weird moving parts that don't go together that they try to tie in that it's just a bunch of misdirection to try and move the story along.
What did you think about it this time? And did Jesse like this one?
I think Jesse was confused by this movie. Because this movie suffers from a lack of propulsion. You're not sure where you're going and you're not sure what's cohesive, and some of it's just batshit crazy. Like, where did this the whole Japanese party at the end, like, where the hell
Chinese.
Did that come? I'm sorry, Chinese.
And yeah, it's it's right out of Gung Ho. It's a little ladies racist,
a little, yeah. These are not ribbons of honor. These are ribbons of shame.
Exactly.
Yeah, no. This movie had some tone problems. It was surprisingly progressive, though, for being the 80s.
as far as...
Well, it was embracing of having a gay child openly. Yeah. You know, yeah. He was...
That's true.
But yeah. then the movie had an open with Bette Midler being phobic of AIDS and herpes and all of that from CPR.
Yes.
So that's some 80s hysteria right there. So this movie had some tone issues. And of course, then there's the obvious, you know, discriminate against the homeless kind of ha-ha funny, making fun of people who can't help themselves kind of humor, which...
It's class warfare.
Yeah. So, and then also seeing Richard Dreyfuss trying to be portrayed as some kind of sexy guy was a real turnoff. It just didn't do it for me.
Well, let me tell you. Elizabeth Peña did it for me in 1980s.
I am not surprised.
She is great.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, here's the thought I had as I watched it this morning. This movie, this script, sure, is based on a French movie, which explains why it has very European attitudes to having affairs. And it's got... again, that class thing going on, but I mean, that's American too. That's not, I'm not blaming it on the French. But divorce yourself from that part of it. This is a plot to a porn movie. Like back when porn movies had plots, or maybe you could be a romance novel or it could be like a smut book, where it's like you have a dysfunctional family, and then a guy comes in and screws almost every member of the family and makes their life better. Like, the only thing he didn't is he should have screwed the son, also, to be fair. Maybe Richard Dreyfuss and the dog. But that's about it. Otherwise, he had sex with everybody in the family that didn't like him and then ended up liking him at the end.
Yeah.
And not liking him, just needing him.
He must have had like a 12-inch personality.
I'm telling you, something.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I you're onto something there.
Because that's what this movie... Basically, we have Beverly Hills couple Barbara, Bette Midler, and Dave Whiteman, Richard Dreyfuss. Of course, we know Richard Dreyfuss from Valley of the Dolls, Jaws, The American President, and W. And they are both very rich, but not very happy. Dave, for Richard Dreyfuss, is actually a surprisingly... likeable character.
He's actually he's almost the most likeable of them all.
He's the hero of this movie.
Yeah.
Which is, again, he's the rich white guy who happens to be also the hero, which is...
Well, he's altruistic.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a ton to talk about down in Beverly Hills, except that... So, it doesn't even have a big, long plot synopsis on either... Wikipedia or IMDb. Well,
it's not a complicated plot, and there is actually not a there is snappy dialogue, but not a tremendous amount of it.
No.
And it's got some social commentary, although I'd forgotten how conventionally attractive Nick Nolte was.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, wow, he's actually kind of attractive here. And
he's got a butter face.
So I was like, well, he looked better than Richard Dreyfuss, so...
Oh, yeah. But Richard Dreyfuss was charming in this movie.
Yeah. Well, but is Richard Dreyfuss ever not charming?
Well, maybe just because I recently read about his personality.
Oh, does he have some peccadilloes?
Well, he's just a jerk. He thinks very highly of himself, which, again, he's a good actor, so whatever. But...
If you've ever heard him read the Apple Terms of Service...
Oh.
Please... Read the software license agreement carefully before using the Apple software. By using the Apple software, you are agreeing to be bound by the terms of this license. If you do not agree to the terms of this license, do not use the software. You expressly acknowledge and agree that use of the Apple software as defined above and services as defined below is at your sole risk, and that the entire risk as to satisfactory quality, performance, accuracy, and effort is with you. No oral or written information or advice given by Apple or an Apple-authorized representative shall create a warranty.
Hilarious. So.
Okay, so we have Beverly Hills couple Barbara, Bette Midler, and Dave, white man, Richard Dreyfuss.
Which is white man, which is funny because they have tension with their next-door neighbor who is a black man.
Little Richard.
Yes.
Yes. Who, interestingly enough, is not black and gay. He is black but married to a white woman.
Is he really now?
No, in the movie he is.
Oh,
that yeah, was his source of tension.
I see.
I get the impression that maybe he is a wee bit gay, but I could be wrong.
He has denounced homosexuality, and it is the devil.
Because
he is
religious. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, womp bop a loo bop a womp bam boom.
or not, as the case may be. Actual mileage may vary.
His wife is only interested in yoga, aerobics, and meditation classes. He's having an affair with the maid, Carmen Elizabeth Pena.
Cliche. And,
yes. Their teenage son, Max, Evan Richards, is confused about his sexuality, and their daughter, Jenny, Tracy Nelson, is suffering from eating disorders. Now, what I thought was impressive about this is Dave and Barbara know all this. I mean, they know that Max is going through some things, and they know that Jenny is going through some things. They just don't have the ability to talk to them directly. Like a lot of families. You know, I could see this as, you know, parallels there. Anyway, they're celebrating Thanksgiving, having their catered food or whatever, and we meet a street tramp, Jerry, Nick Nolte, from Warrior. And he is hungry, homeless, sleeping rough, and has lost his dog. In a kind of a very sad scene, he decides to fill his pockets with rocks and dive in Barbara and Dave's pool to kill himself.
Well, he doesn't lose his dog as much as his dog gives him the middle finger by running off with somebody who actually has food.
But he is treated poorly because he thinks his dog has run off or somebody has stolen his dog.
Yes.
Which, I mean, he tries to kill himself, and then, of course, a very famous scene is where Richard Dreyfuss is holding a phone, is yelling, someone call 911, someone call 911, which I thought was always hilarious, even at the time.
It's still hilarious. Boyfriend Jesse actually pointed that out. It's like, he's got the phone. I'm like, yeah, but
that's why it's funny.
That's why it's funny, and in real life, that shit happens.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. But anyway, so Dave rescues Jerry from drowning. And decides to let him basically stay for a while in their cabana. Kind of a Cato Kaelin situation. Back before being Cato Kaelin was...
I was going to say, before Mr. Stabby.
Actually, you know, O.J. Simpson could have been the neighbor in this movie, too.
Oh, dear.
He could be driving, like, a white Rolls and whatnot. So, Barbara, from the get-go...
Just really slowly.
Barbara reminds me of a girl I used to work with, who is famous, at least in my life, for the phrase, I accused her of snobbery. And she's like, hey, just because you're poor doesn't make you more interesting. I'd rather hang around rich people that are interesting than poor people that aren't.
Well, thank you for proving my point about your snobbery.
So, yeah, I mean, turns out Jerry is a bullshit artist, but also has some sort of crazy street wisdom. And I don't want to know. He's kind of... I guess he's not really pulling a scam on Dave, but...
He's a charlatan.
Well, but he's...
They call him out in the movie. He's a charlatan.
He is. Yeah, everything he says is a lie. However, again, he's got some sort of crazy wisdom and managed to connect with everybody, usually with his penis, to make their lives better or more interesting. In such a way as he rekindles the romance between Barbara and Dave. And now, if he had been available in Ruthless People, Sam and Barbara could have had a wonderful life together.
Well, he jumpstarts her vagina.
He does, yes. Did I tell you when I woke up to see that my daughter was still up at 3 o'clock in the morning, I could not go back to sleep, so I watched Love Guru. And it's not as... I mean, it's bad. But it's not as bad as the lambasting it got.
I don't know that I've ever seen it. It's a Mike Myers movie, so my expectations would be pretty low.
If you have those low expectations... You'll find yourself amused by some of the stuff and just groaning at some of the other stuff because it's super dumb.
So it's Zoolander-esque, would you say?
It's Zoolander mixed up with the Tim
Kazurinsky. So I married an axe. Oh.
With the Tim Kazurinsky's having a good time, wishing you were here. except that, for instance, whenever he greets somebody, he says, Marishka Hargate. So if you like that kind of humor, especially when she shows up and he's like, Marishka Hargate, Marishka Hargate.
So
you should watch it. If you think, if the idea, yes.
That makes me, I'm actually laughing. I mean, that just you describing that makes me laugh. So I'm not above that. Okay.
You know what? It's on Amazon Prime.
I will go watch it. I will put it on the list.
You and Jesse should both watch it. And it's got Justin Timberlake. It's
Jessica
got,
Alba.
It's got Sir Ben Kingsley.
Oh, I'm in. Yeah. I don't have anything against. I like the Austin Powers movies.
Yeah, this is that, except that I think part of the backlash is because his character is Indian or grew up in India, although he's white. He and Deepak Chopra, the conceit is that he is Guru Pitka, and he is the second-rate Deepak Chopra, who he grew up with, and they had the same teacher in India. And so he's always trying
to become
the better guru.
I like Mike Myers, and I will watch it.
I think it's better than So I Married an Axe Murderer. But again, I think just to finish my thought.
It would almost necessarily have to be.
I think the backlash, instead of the Austin Power movies, which are also dumb, in the Austin Power movies, he is spoofing
white people,
British culture. Yes. And in this movie, he is sort of making fun of Indian culture. So it could kind of come off as a little racist.
So. Racist. Yeah, I get it.
Mariska Hargate.
See, that makes me laugh. Also, I like her, so.
And Justin Timberlake plays a French Canadian. So, again, it's just dumb. Stupid. It's a dumb movie.
Stupid. I love it. I already like it.
Yeah.
It will go on the list. It will be something I do this weekend.
Worth your Prime subscription.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, so Jerry, it's so funny. I was surprised how Richard Dreyfuss' character is so sympathetic, because he's not the evil businessman, whatever. He's just lost his way a little.
But he's super altruistic.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yep.
He's super humanitarian. He's dissatisfied
with his life. But again, he's super rich or whatever. So anyway, so all he needs is a little push in the right direction, as well as everybody, again, needs a little push, usually by his
penis.
Gigantic, little Nicky. And yet, Jerry is not very sympathetic.
Oh, no.
Especially at the end, he's not very sympathetic. And yet, this movie does not end with him walking away. This movie ends with him going back to the family that doesn't like him very much.
Well, it's because he's spreading the herp around.
Well, the thing is, they feel sorry for him, which is kind of... I mean... One of the things about this movie is that it makes you feel for the homeless people, and yet none of the homeless people ask for handouts in this movie. Like, when they invite the guy to the restaurant, he doesn't want food from them. He doesn't want, you know, a handout.
No, but he does steal food from everybody else.
Well, true. And you know, there is that little bit of business about how Nick Nolte is nice to the Iranian kid next door. Amir, and Amir's dad gives him $500 for being nice to his kid, which that's a little racist too, but.
Well, yeah. I thought it was, boyfriend Jesse was like, well, also equally racist that the guy just happens to have 8 wives or whatever.
Well, yeah, yeah. It's the whole thing again.
Yeah, it was 86, so.
Exactly, yeah.
We were lucky they didn't all have turbans and run around anyway.
And then I put, oh, and Little Richard is in this movie.
Yeah.
Because the plot summary ends with Dave helps Jerry gets back on his feet. The family is initially disgusted by Jerry, but they end up growing fond of him after getting to know him better. Period. The end. Like, that's not exactly how this movie ends. Nah. The movie ends is they all like him reluctantly after he points out something that makes their life make more sense or changes their perspective, which is all great. And yet he himself does not grow as a character.
No.
And the family does not. I mean, the family is a more cohesive family at the end of it, but it's not like Dave is given a whole bunch of homeless people stuff.
The best thing that he does for anybody is that he gets Matisse to actually be like a normal dog.
Yes, yes, yes. Matisse is Max the dog. And by the way, or sorry, Mike the dog. Matisse is a beautiful dog, by the way. Is great. And there's the dog psychiatrist, which is very funny. And there's Barbara's guru, which is very funny, especially since the morning that I watched The Love Guru. Although the guru does not turn to her and say, Mariska Hargitay, Barbara. But yeah, it's wild. It is a wild movie. Like Jerry convinces Carmen that she's being taken advantage of and she just should be a communist. which, again, that's all great and stuff, but it doesn't go anywhere.
Oh. Well, it goes into his pants.
Well, yeah, he makes her, he gives her all these revolutionary, or I guess not revolutionary ideas, like revolutionist ideas, which again is all great and stuff, but it doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't lead anywhere.
Yeah.
So maybe it was supposed to tick off a box, just kind of like, the fact that the family, they ran out of white meat on their turkey, and then later it became a joke about little Richard having a white wife.
Yeah, there was a lot of low-hanging fruit in this movie.
Yes, and little Richard being upset because Dave and Barbara's house got the police presence.
That was some pretty in-your-face up front.
Oh, it was great.
Up front, very social commentary, though, right in the beginning of this movie, which seems really out of place.
Well, especially later when little Richard looks right at the Iranian guy and says, "There goes the neighborhood."
Yeah.
So, I mean, that proves that, okay, yeah, so I guess he's racist too. That's, I guess, yeah. How that works.
I think the point was that it was Beverly Hills and everybody was stuck up.
Yeah, I guess.
It didn't really matter who was who. It was just everybody was stuck up about it, everybody else. So.
Oh, but little Richard, he had a big, long rant about it.
He did. Probably not unjustified. Probably not unreal.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. No, I'm not saying this is bad social commentary. I'm just saying there was a lot of social commentary shoehorned into this movie. So,
yes.
Do you have any other notes on this movie?
I didn't. So I didn't take notes for either movie.
Yeah, I don't believe it. Beautiful house, by the way.
It was better than the Ruthless People
House. I was going to say, it's definitely had a better decorator.
Yeah, it had some odd choices. Yeah, everything was beige or white, which really kind of made me twitch.
Ah, but it worked for a certain
80s aesthetic.
A certain sense of wealth too.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose that's true.
Like if you're not gonna have a lot of different it seems like having it kind of monotone is kind of a Hollywood, Beverly Hills, nouveau riche kind of thing.
Yeah, well, if you're rich, you have white stuff because you can afford to replace it constantly.
Exactly, or keep it clean.
Yes. Yeah. Well, pay somebody to keep it clean.
Yeah, of course.
You're not going to keep it clean. Yeah. It's like, yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, Jesse, did he like this movie at all, or
I don't know. I couldn't get a read.
Not as much as Ruthless People?
Not as much. Definitely not as much.
I apologize by the way for the subtitles, which in this movie the subtitle company made it clear that, I don't know about when you saw it, if it was the same, but the subtitles in some cases, had everything spoken was on the subtitle.
Yes.
Whether it needed to be or not, including all the lyrics to the songs and translated versions of all the foreign speak.
Yes.
And it took up the whole screen.
Yeah, when he said "c'est la vie," they translated that into English.
Exactly. Yeah, they did that with the Chinese too.
Yeah, so it was hilarious.
Yeah, like they had him say, the Chinese guy speaking Chinese, but they have him translated, and then they have the translator also saying the same thing again. Like, that is not necessary. Come on, people.
Well, if you're gonna do a job, do it right. I guess I don't know. No, it didn't annoy me as much as it amused me. But you know, having the lyrics to the Talking Heads song made me chuckle. So because
yeah, it's you don't normally do that in captioning. But they did the whole experience. It had, you know, it said like dramatic violin music or something, or I can't remember what exactly the phrase was. It was like,
yeah, there were
tense
several
drumming. Like what? Like, I guess that is right. I guess.
Yeah. I mean, this movie had it all. It had, you know, the gay child, the eating disorder, the homeless commentary, the immigrant commentary, the, you know, racist commentary. So this, you know,
they brought up all these quote problems, but they didn't solve any of them.
Oh, no. They didn't take any of them too seriously.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And again, Dave and Barbara, except that they hadn't, the spark had gone out of their marriage long ago. They weren't A, bad people, or B, unaware of the problems or unsympathetic characters, even to the people having the problems.
Yeah.
I mean, the kids didn't know how to communicate with them, but it wasn't a character flaw.
No.
Just kids being kids.
Yeah, it was pretty normal.
Yeah.
They weren't ruthless.
No, they were not ruthless. Hey!
Although that weird Bette Midler singing in the middle of it was an odd choice.
Yes, yes. Well, it's just because you have Bette Midler.
Yeah.
So, it's like with Nick Nolte playing the piano. I don't know if it's him really playing the piano. I doubt it. So, thank you for this indulgent twofer. I liked it. It was a fun trip back in time.
It was a nice interlude where I didn't have to put too much brain power into anything and I didn't have to take notes.
Exactly, yes.
So sometimes those are nice, especially because I'm just coming off of my weekend in Seattle with the folks.
Yeah. So are we on to housekeeping?
Housekeeping.
I don't have a lot of housekeeping. School started. How about that? School started. happy to have my daughter back in school. I actually have this week off. So tomorrow is my last day of... I think Kelly and I are going to try to go to see a movie. We're going to try to go see The Art of Racing in the Rain.
Oh, God.
Yeah, well, it's a movie we can at least agree to go see. I'm going to eat some popcorn and have some fun at the movie theater.
Okay.
She's going to cry. I might cry, too. Who knows?
I was going to say, you know, it's like Marley and me all over again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Except I don't think the dog dies, does it? She's read the book. She knows how it ends. I just think the lady dies, but we'll see. I don't want to spoilers. I haven't seen it, so I can't really spoil it, I don't think. But and maybe the dog is like the narrator of the story. I don't know about that.
Yes. Either. Okay. And I think it's Tim Allen.
Oh, great! We'd be like, now these Democrats don't know what they're doing.
Maybe it's Dances with Wolves.
Kevin Costner?
Maybe.
Have you watched Tim Allen's new show, Last Man Standing?
I have seen parts of it incidentally.
Now, I know that watching shows like, especially later season Roseanne and Designing Women probably was guilty of this. A lot of Golden Girls guilty of this, where they shoehorn like liberal thought into a show. And maybe if you were ultra conservative, that would be offensive to you. Like the Tim Allen show is offensive to me. It's basically just like the Fox News version of a regular show, but in not a way that's clever. It's just
it is like the negative of like a progressive Roseanne.
Yeah, but and it's not as clever.
No, because most of those tit-for-tat Republican conservative negative wannabe copies are just faded Xerox copies.
Yeah.
They're opposite just to be opposite, and that doesn't make it smart. That just makes it contrary and smug. Kevin Costner, by the way.
Oh, okay. Much better. So he'll suggest that the movie was neat. It's a Madonna joke there. From Truth or Dare.
Oh, I see. I said we needed to watch that. Right.
And then they made fun of him for saying the show was neat.
Yes.
Which is kind of a dick move on their part, but.
Well, that was the time. I mean, you know, Warren Beatty was a dick too.
Yeah. By the way, okay, here I get some housekeeping. You seen the show Lights Out with David Spade?
No.
David Spade has a show, I think, at Comedy Central, that is a half hour, sort of a talk show. It's an opening monologue in front of three comedians that he sort of talks with. But everything, David Spade is actually a likable guy, but he's so, is he though? Well, the thing is, his comedy stylings is he's kind of like snide, you know, like talking like if you know he's reading jokes. He doesn't pretend that he made up these jokes. He's reading jokes, and then he's like, yeah, you know, it's not working. Oh, this is working. Yeah, it's not working. And then he comes over and he's like delivers a punchline and kind of gives it like he trails off at the end. So he's not selling the joke. He's kind of undermining the joke, which could be funny. But his guests are laughing at these dumb jokes in a way that's much more enthusiastic than they need to. It's like they're helping out a friend. That's it. They're not like they're trying to seed the crowd with laughter, I guess.
That sounds
and
gross.
They don't have time to get into anything, and it's all written jokes. I mean, like, there are very few off-the-cuff things. It's all written. And I can't decide whether it's, like, the worst piece of trash ever or that I should give it a little bit, because I'm helpless not to watch it. Like, I have it on my DVR to record, so maybe it'll find its legs. Hmm. But maybe not, because I don't think the world needs it. And right now, all the guests are just basically doing David Spade a favor, I think.
I have a hard time with him sometimes. Sometimes I think he's funny. Sometimes I can't tolerate him. The funny thing is I really enjoyed him when he was with Chris Farley.
Yeah.
In the, you know, all those.
Well,
those
he plays a good straight guy to yeah, Chris Farley's no, crazy person.
Yeah, exactly. So,
So other than that, I think that's all my housekeeping. Lights out with David Spade. Oh, actually, here's now your housekeeping.
Boyfriend Jesse and I went up to Seattle and met the parents after their Rolling Stones concert. And we spent 3 nights, 4 days in the Seattle area and walking and shopping and eating and doing all those fun mom and dad things. They were staying in a rental condo Airbnb type thing in a building that's an apartment building, except two of the floors of the apartment building are Airbnb or whatever, so it's some kind of commercial enterprise. They weren't in the best part of town, but turns out downtown Seattle, most of downtown Seattle is not the best part of town, so it was a little sketchy. Not too bad. We stayed at a hotel that was about 5 blocks away from them, so I parked the car, the valet parked it at the hotel and didn't get it out much. We mostly walked. And of course, you know, the folks
You did the underground tour. Thank you.
We did. We did do the underground tour because I've done the Portland underground tour. And so that was actually super interesting. And even Mom liked it. So that was kind of cool because she was a little skeptical.
So when we talk about the Night Strangler, part of that takes place in the Seattle Underground.
Oh, does it?
And it stars Richard Anderson.
Oh.
You know, Oscar Goldman.
The Underground Tour was actually pretty cool. There's two competing Underground Tour companies. and we got the newer one, but the groups are smaller, which I think is more conducive to a tour.
Sure.
It you know, gives you more intimate feeling. But the guy was super enthusiastic and super energetic, not in an off-putting way, in a really kind of positive way. So we did the underground tour, and that was cool because we actually got to go in quite a few. We went into 3 or 4 different places into the underground. So we were actually under the sidewalks and all of that stuff, which is crazy. A lot of history, which I didn't know about. And then boyfriend Jesse and I would, leave the parents for the evening from their hotel, from their condo, and then walk back to our hotel. And then one of the nights we decided, I think it was Saturday night, it would have been Friday night, I guess. Friday night we went wandering around downtown by the piers on our own, and some guy, artist guy, who's probably homeless, was like, hey, you know, do you guys like good poetry? And of course, stupid me, I was like, as opposed to bad poetry? And then he followed us for a while and was like, well, I'm not asking for a handout, but I'm, you know, I am working. So, you know, how about I give you a poem? And I'm like, you can give me a poem, but I'm not paying for one. You know, I'm not doing extortion. You're not walking up to me and extorting money. But he followed us for a while and then realized he wasn't getting any money from us and then went to fleece somebody else. But,
you could have had a new theme song.
And this was not that caliber.
Okay, all right.
Not even close. But we went back the next day with Mom and Dad to the piers, and I took some pictures, which I can share. But now that the Alaska Viaduct is being dismantled after their earthquake several years ago, it looks completely different. It looks so weird to me because my entire life up until recently, my whole view of that part of Seattle was this big behemoth concrete viaduct obscured everything. And now it's gone. So it's weird. So I imagine all those businesses that were behind it, now they have all this exposure. I imagine their rents just skyrocketed.
I was going to say they're going to lose their mushroom gardens.
Yeah, so that was kind of cool. We had some weird homeless people around that were doing weird things, and it was bizarre. It was typical Seattle. We had cousin's lunch. Dad's cousins. I heard
about that. Thank you for going to cousin's lunch.
Oh, of course. Anytime I can go and have notes for the train wreck. But no, we made good time, and we had a good time with the folks, and they don't seem to be slowing down, which is good.
I was there on Monday, and Dad is ripping up the kitchen floor to replace it.
Yeah, because, you know, why would he slow down for retirement?
He shouldn't. He needs to keep going.
But it was good to see them, and they'll be fine. He'll be fine.
Oh, yeah. It is a transition in their lives, though. Yeah.
But then on the last day, I don't know if they told you this, the last day as we were getting them out of their condo, so this is weird Airbnb thing. The instructions are, so they had a parking space in the underground garage of this condo building that came with the key fob remote for the door,
okay.
The garage door. But the instructions are when you leave the unit unlocked and you leave your keys in it. Because then housekeeping comes and cleans out the condo and returns the keys to the lockbox and all this stuff. So we packed up all Mom and Dad's stuff from the condo and went to the car. And Dad said, well, now that you're in the car, will you just pull out of the garage and then I'll take the keys back upstairs and then I'll come back and meet you in the parking lot. And so we're like, okay. So he runs up and then we're waiting and we're waiting and we're waiting and we're waiting and we're waiting. And we're waiting, and then this fire truck pulls up.
Oh, no.
And we're like,
I did not hear this story.
I'm like, that sounds like it's super close. And of course, we're in this parking lot, which is kind of in this center courtyard, so we can't see the street necessarily.
But from you're outdoors.
We're outdoors.
Okay.
So we're like, that's weird. And so we're starting to get a little nervous. And then I thought, well, maybe we should go in and check on things. And then Dad comes out. He just pops out of one of the corners. And they're like, oh. He goes, well, that was weird. And we're like, weird? He goes, yeah, I was stuck in the elevator for a little while. You know, the elevator stopped. And then it started back up eventually. And then it let me out on the floor. And then I had to just, you know, walk the rest of the way out and blah, blah, blah. And so as we pull out, these fire trucks are like, maybe somebody is stuck in one of the other elevators.
Yeah.
So I'm like, or somebody
pulled. Or they came for Dad.
or somebody pulled the fire alarm and the elevators went to the first floor, which is what normally they do.
Yeah.
So that may have been it. But we're like, well, good thing we got there super early to get you to the airport. So. It was one of those like, oh, that could have turned out very differently.
Exactly.
And he's like, well, I had my cell phone, but I don't know that it would have worked. And I was like, well, the building's full of Wi-Fi, so, you know, for future reference, just know that if you can't get a cell signal and there's Wi-Fi, you can still, like, send messages to people. So,
oh, yeah.
Just keep that in mind. So, but, no, they're doing good. They had a good time. We had some good food and some bad food. So it was an interesting kind of dining experience in Seattle. We ate at possibly the worst Italian place ever.
Worse than Rollins, Wyoming?
I don't know how to compare that.
Well, I was going to say worse than the Epicurean restaurant in Prince Rupert, but you weren't there. That was Drew. Yeah,
I wasn't there. It was what I imagine, like, kitchen nightmares would come in and try and help at some point.
At the very first part, Mom was telling me about a Chinese restaurant that may or may not have had bugs crawling through the walls as you're eating. Or maybe that was one they went to.
That was one they went to. With... Because I would not have stayed at a restaurant that there were bugs on the wall.
Yeah.
I would have left.
Exactly.
There would have been no, like, well, like, no. I'm... No.
And there's nothing cute about it.
Like, no.
This whole thing about, the best food comes out of the holes-in-the-wall restaurants. Yeah. Hole-in-the-wall restaurants, meaning the whole restaurant is a hole in the wall of a bigger building. It doesn't mean that there are holes in the walls with bugs crawling out of them.
Yeah. I'm not into eating cockroach soup, so... Now, this Italian place, which got decent ratings, which I'm always skeptical of, because you don't know how many they wrote, but...
Exactly. Ratings and bad ratings are the same. You don't know how many are written by the competing restaurant or by the owners of the restaurant.
So, all the entrees came with a pasta dish.
Okay.
And we're like, well, what kind of pasta? And they said, well, it's the chef's choice as to the kind of pasta that goes with it. Whatever he thinks is most appropriate.
Oh, so you don't get to pick.
That's interesting. Everything was penne, basically. And I'm pretty sure mine was microwaved. So,
of course.
Because it was super scalding hot in the center and gummy and not hot on the outside. Huh. My chicken was good, but Mom's lasagna looked like a... abomination. And Jesse ordered a pizza, and the pizza was okay, but he asked for ranch, and the waitress was like, honey, you don't get ranch in an Italian restaurant. Like, that's an insult to pizza. Like, oh, that's the kind of place we're at. Okay. And Mom and Dad ate it. I think their food was fine-ish. Mm-hmm. But I told Jesse later, I'm like, yeah, we will never be going back there. But we ate at an Irish pub on the first day we were there, I think. And that was seriously the best damn food I've ever had. So,
Cool.
So it was like hit and miss, you know?
Yeah.
And then we hit a gelato place, which was really quite excellent. It was kind of uncharacteristically warm in Seattle, for the time of year. So, I was happy to go back to the hotel and crank up the AC.
Yes. That's going around.
So my hotel room was like 66 degrees, and boyfriend Jesse was like, it's too cold in here. And I'm like, use a blanket.
Exactly.
Because I'm like, I am sleeping with no clothes on, and I am on top of the sheets, and it's 66 degrees and breezy. I am loving it. But the nice thing was that the TV in the hotel room had an HDMI hookup. So I hooked my laptop up to it, and we watched Roadhouse because he's never seen it.
Oh, what do you think about Roadhouse?
He thought it was pretty good. He goes, it was definitely cheesy, but it was pretty good. I'm like, it is pretty good.
It's also pretty cheesy. Also, I think I told you that I used to use Roadhouse as an example for trainees. And I realized recently that I can't do that anymore because more of my trainees have not seen it than have seen it. And if I just try to throw a clip in there, all it is people smoking and swearing. It's like, well, that doesn't translate well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I still haven't watched the sequel, so.
There's a sequel?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure. I thought we had this discussion, but I could be wrong.
Maybe.
I'm pretty sure there's a sequel.
Well, I'm waiting for the sequel to Passion of the Christ, you know. Passion of the Christ 2, Resurrection.
Roadhouse 2, Last Call, 2006.
Well, obviously Patrick Swayze's not in it, right?
No.
So is there anybody in it who was in the original?
I don't think so. Oh, Jake Busey's in it.
Of course.
Yeah, I don't think anybody, yeah.
New owners of the Double Deuce.
While he's deep undercover in New York, DEA agent Shane Tanner, the son of legendary cooler named Dalton, learns that his uncle Nate Tanner got beat up by a group of men because he doesn't want to sell the Black Pelican, his bar in Louisiana.
Oh, dear God. So it's none of the same thing.
Yeah, it's just tangentially related. I don't know. I may have to watch this just because it looks awful.
You can give us the whole review.
Oh, man. It's like, and the cover art makes it look like it's a Chippendale stripper review.
Of course. Well, there you go. You could twofer with Love Guru.
Jake Busey. Ugh.
Oh, that's the other thing is, I thought Nick Nolte looked very Gary Busey in the Down That Beverly Hills.
No, I could see that. What else is going on? I think that's it for me for now.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're going to leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're going to leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the Brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open in that case. We got Aaron, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way.